In the twisting catacombs and ruins of the Necromunda Underhive, there are those who use their skills and knowledge navigating the tunnels to earn their living guiding gangs through peril to new opportunities. So grab your ammo and your respirator and join us on The Dome Runners. Initiate Keelung checks his weapon, a rusted old revolver. Spinning the chambers and ensuring the lubricant he had applied would keep his gun firing longer than it had last time, when it had ceased after a single shot. The drip of leaking coolant, repetitive, echoes in his ear. Inside of a tunnel vent, the initiate lies in wait. His master, Maester Dominic, had bid him to find the Escher champion, leading a group of Juves through the opposing tunnel. Gun in one hand, he worked to unlatch the grate, separating him from the tunnel's interior. Crawling through ducts seemed to be Dominic's primary use for the boy. Fat lot of good that it had done so far. Getting the drop on your opponent only meant something if you could hit them. And the boy's arm shook and buckled under the heavy recoil of the pistol. This time, though, this would be different. The pistol would be how he finished them off, because this time his master had given him something of value. A bottle full to the brim with promethium and rigged with a fuse. This would be the moment, the time that he finally brought the Emperor's Grace to their hated Escher rivals. The grate dropped to the ground, and Keelung slid through the narrow hole. He could hear the pounding footsteps of approaching warriors, so he saddled up to the corner wall for cover and lit the fuse. Rounding the corner, he spotted them. Three female warriors, taller, better fed than he was, running at him, poisoned blades and last pistols drawn. He took his bomb and threw it as hard as he could. He giggled with glee as he did so, hoping that he would finally earn his first actual kill on the battlefield. He would finally bring honor to House Cawdor. But then, to his surprise, the bottle struck an overhead beam. The bottle shattered and the flammable liquid caught fire and exploded. The nearest Escher fighter, a young woman not much older than he, was caught in the blast and went down, her body covered in flames. But Keelung never had the chance to see it, as he too was caught in the fireball. Though his robes proved some initial protection, his feeble attempt to flop around did little to extinguish the flames. As the heat licked at his skin, he screamed, screamed to the Emperor, screamed for deliverance from the holy flames. Seconds later, the second Escher Druve silenced him by slitting his throat. Her champion praised her. "Good job, Cindy. Never waste a bullet when a knife stroke will suffice." Welcome once again to the Dome Runners. I'm your host, Crimson Oracle, and this episode is about the Zone Mortalis battlefields of Necromunda. We'll talk about a variety of settings these boards might represent, putting together a good Zone Mortalis board, and the mechanics of Zone Mortalis gameplay. In the Arbitrator's Corner, we'll talk about representing territories players are fighting over on the tabletop. But for my opening monologue, I wanted to take a moment to discuss something I've seen complaints about in discussions about the new Necromunda release, House of Chains, a dedicated book for House Goliath. No sooner had the book been announced than I saw tons of complaints about the additional rules, both adding cost and complexity. I do understand that folks have limited budgets, so it can be tough to buy every release, but I would like to put forward the suggestion that you don't have to buy every release. Don't get me wrong, I'm absolutely someone who buys every release. Well, I guess technically I don't have Cal Jericho, but other than that. The reality of these releases, though, is that after the hardcover rules, they're just expansion content. The new rules and the models will sure be fun and flavorful, But if you're worried about power creep or imbalance, just don't play with the new books. You have a totally functioning game in the first two books, years worth of content. I say this as someone who's about to wrap a year-long Dominion campaign using only the core two books for our rules. The expansions are great, and I'm excited to start our Law and Misrule campaign in a couple of months, but there's no urgency for you to try to keep up with every book release. Take your time, enjoy the game, and add complexity slowly. I know this is probably an odd thing for people coming from Warhammer 40K to hear, where each release tends to be important because a significant portion of games are played as pickup or tournament games, but Necromunda really centers the idea that you're in control of the game, not the rules writers. So as a player, you choose the rules you want to use. Play the game your way, and you'll have a far better time than if you let the designers dictate the game to you.
Tired of trying to find a way to spice up your Soylent's Veridans? Hankering for a meaty treat? Come on down to Hive Guys, Crocs, Burgers, and Fries. In an experimental mood? Why not order a Double Down, a hot Crocs patty sandwiched between two fried croot patties and slathered in our special sauce? And don't forget a hot side of fries to round out the meal. Hive Guys, because you don't have any other options.
On to our main topic for the episode. Zone Mortalis is the High Gothic, a fake language spoken by the elites of the Warhammer universe, for the catacombs and tight spaces that can make for a common and particularly brutal environment for combat. Zone Mortalis boards conceptually represent the claustrophobic tunnels of the Underhive. These environments are where the lowest low of the denizens of the Hive Primus live, and they're a perfect starting point for Necromunda campaigns. They don't take up as much table space, they get you into the action quickly, and thematically, gangs often cut their teeth hunting each other in the tunnels, moving up into the more populated areas of the Hive as they gain more reputation and better equipment. In practical terms, the gameplay on Zone Mortalis is more forgiving for melee, which is at somewhat of a disadvantage on a regular Sector Mechanicus table due to the open fields of fire there. Zone Mortalis originally limited you to a single level of gameplay. The tiles that come with Necromunda Underhive offered fixed layouts for walls with some occasional hazards, and now long out of production Bad Zone Delta 7 tiles expanded with a huge variety of deadly hazards to spice up your battlefield. These are both still fantastic ways to play the game, though I do recommend getting a set of MDF walls to make the visuals of your board better. With the introduction of the plastic Zone Mortalis terrain, there's now additional levels available to expand these environments upwards. This has led to something of a blurring of the distinction between Zone Mortalis and Sector Mechanicus environments. There are still some lingering gameplay differences, which we'll discuss in On the Tabletop, but the biggest difference is the aesthetic and thematic difference. Zone Mortalis is generally representing the lowest, most dangerous levels of the Hive, the spaces where tunnels are suddenly open into giant growths of toxic psychedelic molds, or chasms that fall into caustic sump waters. Zone Mortalis is the most dangerous place to adventure, and also houses some of the greatest secrets and treasures of Necromunda. Ancient technology buried by Hive quakes, valuable psychoactive compounds, and countless varieties of materials reside in the depths of the Hive. My favorite part about Zone Mortalis is the modularity. By building around 12x12-inch tiles, the environments can be altered as needed, making your terrain extremely flexible. If designing fixed tiles, you can make hazard tiles to mix in, or just add specific elements from your defending gang. You could even have each gang make their own base tile or tiles for when they're the defender, etc. For the more budget-conscious, as I mentioned earlier, there are tons of MDF options for Zone Mortalis walls that give you a good, beautiful environment at a much lower cost, though it will be lower detail. I personally have been using the Deadbolt's Derelict walls from Death Ray Designs for some time now, and I couldn't be happier with them. The range has expanded greatly and even allows for 3D play in and of itself, so if you are looking for options, that certainly is something I would consider. Now, to expand on this topic, I have a guest. We'll be back in a moment.
Gang in a rut? Can't afford to keep up with the arms race? Well, between you and me, there's a way you can beat them at their own game. Come on down to Jimmy's Guns and Stuff. It's where I buy all my guns and most of my stuff. Jimmy's carries all the hardware you want with none of the Vansar name brand markup. Got guns to sell? Jimmy wants them. And don't worry about the serial numbers. It won't be a problem. Don't forget to ask about our buy one, get a bottle of Rock Gut free policy. And don't forget to stock up on grenades and ammo. Don't get ripped off by Vansar pricks. Come to Jimmy. So now on to the discussion portion of the show. I have Neil, one of my friends from Twitter, on the line. Neil, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So, Neil, first off, you said you wanted to talk a little bit about how you first discovered Necromunda.
Yes. I guess it must have been 1995. My brother and I decided to go to Games Day in Baltimore, and after we tried a couple events and looked at the Golden Demon thing, most of the events were, you know, you controlled one unit in a group of 20 people, and in Warhammer Fantasy Battle, that meant you couldn't go right or left without making someone mad at you because you got in their way of their unit.
Yep.
And while we were waiting for a Warhammer 40K game where you each controlled a single vehicle and waiting to be allowed to put our vehicles on the board, the table next to us was some crazy display with a single GW employee there. And so we started talking to him, and they were demoing this new game, Necromunda. And we played that the rest of the time instead of playing any of the other events we'd signed up for. And we kind of wondered why everyone else wasn't playing this game. And then we took it back with us to college and played it for 2 years instead of Blood Bowl.
I'll tell you what, the first time I played Necromunda, it was a revelation. I was like, wait a second, why have I been spending all this time building like huge armies when I could get like a fulfilling game experience out of like a handful of models who all have names and personalities? It definitely scratched an itch that I didn't know I had until I played it.
Yeah, and every time they released new minis, like they just did, I always wonder how many more people are going to realize they should be playing Necromunda more.
I know what you mean. I've made it my personal mission to introduce every person in the area who's even remotely interested to the game. So I guess primarily we're going to be talking about Zomortalis terrain. I guess I wanted to talk to you about how you approach doing a Zomortalis build. Do you start with a theme? Do you sketch out your ideas in advance, or do you just kind of play with the models, that kind of thing?
Well, since the Dark Uprising set with the 3D Zomortalis terrain, I've just kind of been doing it ad hoc. I place the tiles down and I start building. Then I swap the pieces around until I get something I like. We used to follow the procedural thing it describes in the rule book for the cardboard tiles.
Right, where you kind of put one down per player back and forth.
Yeah. Yeah, that. But most of my opponents, I get there before to the game store before them, and they're fine with leaving it more or less how it is. I guess what I normally try and think about is making it interesting tactically, which to me is, you know, there's multiple ways to get certain places. Like there's one long corridor that's pretty open where but then there's a shorter way with a door, but maybe that door is locked, and then maybe a third way that's really short, but you got to crawl through a vent and waste a whole turn with your double move,
right?
Things like that. Of course,
right, so the board sort of is part of the strategy of the game, is sort of thinking about how you approach movement. It makes the board kind of a component in gameplay, the third player, if you will.
Yeah, because I find, as opposed to Sector Mechanicus, where you might be able to take some pot shots at people from the very beginning and you're kind of just having a running gunfight, if you set up the Zomortalis board the way I like, then there comes a point you're maneuvering around, and then there comes a point where you're on opposite sides of a room or opposite sides of a door, and you don't know whether you want to open that door or make your opponent open that door.
I know exactly what you mean. I was doing a sort of co-op mission the other day,
And we play co-op missions where we all have the same objective, and we don't necessarily have to hurt each other in order to achieve it, but we are able to hurt each other. You know what I mean? Like, so you want to target somebody, I you know, that's totally allowed. So my friend, he opens the door that is next to the other player who's adjacent, and the guy immediately just starts chucking rad grenades through the door. Like, he was like, you opened the door. What did you, like, if you left the door alone, I would have just gone onward towards the bad guys. But as soon as you, you know, you crossed that line, then I had to respond. And it was the rad grenades are brutal.
And like, one dirty trick that I like, if you get to pick your tactics cards, is add the one, you can do the one where you add a vent and you're on the opposite side of the wall for your opponent. And if you have a, especially if you have a template weapon, you can set them on fire with a flamer or poison them with the nightshade thrower. Or
right, and if they want to respond, they have to crawl through the thing.
Yeah, and if you, or if you combine it with two tactics cards, you can take like the one that lets you do a single move to go through the vent, and or some other shenanigans that'll get you.
yeah, that's a good one. I actually, the opening vignette, I decided to do like a little, it's not even really a short story, it's more like a mood piece, but for the opening of the episode, there's a little story about a Juve who's been crawling through a tunnel, through one of those vents, and has an incendiary bomb, but it doesn't quite go as he's expecting.
In two campaigns ago, my leader thought he was pretty slick, and he climbed through a vent, and I think he had something like a tactics card that gave him an extra action or something, and
right.
He entered a room where the enemy leader was an Orlok was there, and he shot him in the back, but it didn't take, because the Orlok leader has three wounds, it didn't take him out, so instead my leader was taken out, and he wasn't too badly hurt, except he was captured, and He had a skin blade, so he used it to try and escape, and then he rolled the thing where you have to roll on the injury table, and then the injury was that he was dead.
Oh, man. That's the losing a leader is like the roughest thing that could happen. It's totally puts you off your game.
Yeah.
Although it is fun. There's some really fun mechanics for like there's one of the intrigues in the Law and Misrule campaign is like replacing your leader with the fighters get to fight it out for who replaces the leader. It's not like it's not like a straight up whoever has the highest leadership. It's like a duel between the different fighters. And I saw someone the other day said that their aberrant was the one who won. So now their cult is being led by an aberrant rather than someone who's, you know, intelligent. That's a curious set of circumstances there. So when you are working on a board, how do you balance modularity versus theme? Do you build based on fixed layouts, or do you try to keep the tiles modular?
With the new terrain, I've kind of figured out from just experimentation, like what the configurations you can make, like how many walls it takes. I feel like if you just have the Dark Uprising set, if you want to use more than four tiles, or there's not a lot of squares of wall that come, even though it looks like a giant, it's a lot of sprues, but it's still.
Yeah. I noticed that too. I feel like there's a lot of, because it's the walls are sort of slotted together, even though it takes up a lot of space on the sprue. Once you assemble a wall section, it doesn't actually fill that much room on the board.
Yeah. Initially I was using like the Sector Mechanicus items and still use them some, like the furnace and also some statues and the Munitorum containers work pretty good as additional walls. I assume at one point there was some hallway that they would fit through that they got into the Zone Mortalis area.
I try not to think too hard about that when I'm, because like the Underhive, you know, you don't know when that container was put in there. That could have been added 1,000 years ago, and then somebody built walls around it because they didn't need to move it, and then the walls crumbled, and that, you know what I mean? Like Hive quakes, it could have just dropped from above. Who knows?
Yeah, so, but Yeah, I kind of have an idea. I guess if because the new terrain is all walls and things, like the cardboard ones had, even with the Bad Zone Delta stuff, then it had really crazy stuff. But the ones with the holes in the floor came with the original Underhive and things like that. I'm trying to build my own protein reclamator out of like Bane Blade and leftover Knight bits,
Oh,
and
nice.
instead of the spending $100 on Noctilith crowns to that
Yeah, as much
seemed.
as that conversion was like stunning to look at, it was definitely like I price checked it and I was just like, "Oh, no."
Yeah,
I just saw Promethium Forge has a really cool friend of the show. Kevin is a friend. The protein reclamator, or I think they call it the smoothie maker. It's enormous. I mean, it would take up most of a 12 by 12 tile, if not all of a 12 by 12 tile. I mean, it's so big. And I think it's only like $50. I mean, it's MDF, so you got to deal with that if you buy that. But I've got a bunch of his terrain, and I definitely was a fan of that design. I've seen a few others that were done with MDF that were a little on the small side. I don't know. I feel like everything in Necromunda should be, taken to silly conclusions.
And I guess I think about, like, do I want it to just be the single level, although now you can have the multiple levels of Zomertalis, so it's kind of it makes a big difference how you put those second levels if you're going to use them, like whether they're in the center or and you have to get to them to take that ground, or can you start at an upper level
Yeah,
and
so
get all around the board.
on that front, when you're using ZM the Zone Mortalis terrain, and you add the taller kind of additional levels, how do you handle line of sight with that? Because I know that the White Dwarf had kind of a set way of doing it, and then other people have kind of played it their own way. I'm just curious what your approach is.
Yeah, wasn't super thrilled with the White Dwarf version, where it just kind of, if you could, the walls did only you could see over the walls if you had line of sight. I like to say if it has the, and I painted them brass so it was you could see easily which ones they were. If it shows the pipe side, then I say it goes all the way up to the ceiling of whatever dome or whatever you call it you're in the Underhive, and if you can't trace line of sight across it, you can't climb across it. Otherwise, it's just a cubicle farm in
Yeah, exactly. So
Necromunda.
that was kind of my issue with that particular approach that they took. I was not a big fan of the idea that the walls were like, a labyrinth that you could kind of hop on top of and run along. That was really kind of immersion breaking for me. It didn't really make any sense. I could understand using the walls as kind of like a an upper level that's very like tight and narrow, but when you're on top of the walls, you can't see down. You can only see kind of on that level, like it along the line of the walls, as though like you're kind of in like a corridor or a a vent space or something. And that to me, I could see doing that. But I've pretty much stuck to keeping it with 2D, just because I have a lot of Sector Mechanicus terrain. So if I want to play 3D, I tend to go with that stuff. Whereas for the Zone Martalis stuff, I like the kind of tunnel feeling where everything is tight and claustrophobic. So I haven't even played with the taller levels yet, but I'll probably get there soon once I actually build my plastic Zone Martalis terrain. I've kind of been holding off. I've got a set of the Deadbolts Derelict MDF walls, and I just use the cardboard tiles because everything. I've been playing on that for 2 years now, so it's convenient.
Yeah, that's the thing. Even though we've got the 3D walls now, there's still a temptation to use the cardboard ones because they're much easier to transport to a gaming store and just lay them down real quick, and then you've got a little maze to run through. The thing I like about doing the extra levels is you've got some fun interactions, like, and in some ways the upper levels I think work better with the rules of the game too, like you've got places you can jump across because the squares in the standard tiles are 2 inches.
Right.
So one, it works with Mighty Leap. If you get that skill, then
Yep.
it's actually useful. That was a there was a few places on the cardboard tiles where Mighty Leap would work, but the other agility skills, clamber and catfall. But even if you don't have those, like the jumping from one platform, it's hard to, you'd have to really try or intentionally leave a thing out to get the Sector Mechanicus to have a space that's, you would want to jump across. It's
Right.
kind of hard to lay it
I
out
kind of
that way, but
I definitely consciously set up situations like that, but that's just 'cause I play Escher and I like to do the kind of silly leaping across gaps and, knifing people in the back kind of approach. But yeah, I know what you mean. Those mechanics wind up not getting used at all if you're not using the extra levels, unless you happen to have one of the tiles that's got a big gap.
Yeah, and then Zomer Tiles, you don't have to think about it as much because if it's just one square between the railings, then that's the Mighty Leap distance, and that's a distance that other people can jump if they make the initiative
Right.
check and amusingly fall down. And they probably won't die just falling if you're just falling to the 2.5.
Right,
So
exactly.
it's just amusing to see them dramatically jump across to try and get your gangers and then just fall on their
Oh,
face.
that's my favorite part is using a jump assault, like using a jump while assaulting and then just face planting. It's like I have a two up. I have a two up initiative check and I still failed.
And even if you're not an agility skill house, you can, there's still things you can do. I mean, the 2.5 is short enough that most people can climb it
Right.
on a single move.
Oh,
And
right.
then
That's a good point.
and also a thing I've been realizing is, the versatile weapons, most of them are 2 inches, so you could stab someone from an upper level under their head.
That
You could,
is. I
if you're
had
on
never
opposite,
even thought of that. That's
if you're
clever.
yeah, and if you're on the edge of the railings, you can probably stab someone with a 2-inch like chain glaive or something. But speaking of the Escher, I believe that whip is 3 inches, if
Oh,
I
it
recall.
is. It's 3 inches.
So you can definitely whip people that are on a railing that's one square away.
One of my
And
new champions for my Chaos Escher gang has the dual shock whips, so I'm very excited
oh.
to get a chance to just whip the hell out of somebody.
Yeah, so and have and because the new tiles, they I've been, I I'm afraid to chop them up to make pitfalls. Although I guess I've been thinking lately, you could just have a square that's whatever, black cloth or cardboard or paper, and then if you took the second level ones, because they're kind of the same shape as the bottom level, right? They're
Right.
just in pieces, and then you could have those form, basically form a tile with them with holes in them where you want the pitfall to be, right?
Yep.
And but yeah, that's the thing. I like when I would when I play Sector Mechanicus, or when I played the old Necromunda with the cardboard terrain, I like to make the buildings as tall as possible. I bought a second set of the original cardboard Necromunda so I could have double height buildings, because I think that's fun to push your limit of how high do you want to go to get a good line of sight. Or
Oh yeah, that's always fun with like that's I feel like it works really well with folks who have the infiltrate skill, because I feel like infiltrate it only helps in a sort of small number of situations. So having like a tall place for them to infiltrate onto and snipe from is definitely one of the things I like to have as an option on the terrain, even though I don't run anything like that. Just to have my Dallak player have that option is always nice.
Well, the counter to that is to take an Ambot, which can infiltrate, and then have to
Yes.
deal with the. I took an Ambot in my last campaign toward the end, and it is pretty nice when you're Kalador or someone that doesn't have access to cunning skills to be able to
Right.
infiltrate yourself, to put a monster a few inches away from them while you move into position.
That would definitely disrupt their battle plans.
Yeah, and I also like to be high because the first two of the new Necromunda campaigns I played, like the first one, the Goliath, and then the next time the Escher had the territory tunnels or whatever.
Oh, the needle ways or the tunnels? There's two. They're both like kind of gamey.
Yeah, the ones that let you set up in like an Underhive, I think they let you just sit up on the bottom floor and you could be as like an inch away from or something.
Yeah, I think that's needle ways. Yeah, that one is like if I could change that territory, I would definitely tweak it a little bit because it winds up making like Zone Mortalis missions in particular really rough. Like that person just gets to start wherever they want.
Yeah, so. That's another thing to have a second level in Zone Mortalis or Sector Mechanicus. So if you know your opponent has that territory, then you can be a little away from getting blasted by a template or whatever.
It's true. It makes a huge difference. Like I was playing a game of looters recently, and my Dillac player has the needle ways, which means that he can set up like six guys in there or something like that. So he could put them wherever he wanted. But I put all of the crates on the top level. So he had to come up still, and I was just able to shoot him off. Like he tried to come up the stairs at me, but you know, I just rained fire down on him until eventually he bottled. Yeah. But, so when you're building your boards, how do you prefer to set up doors? Do you go for a lot of doors on your builds?
Oh yeah. I like a lot of doors. One, 'cause I'm Kaldor and I kind of want to get in close combat range or at least flame template range, but I think they make the game more interesting. I mean, because they block line of sight, but then you open them and then they don't anymore, and there's tactic cards that open all the doors at once or open an individual door. There's all kinds of, the doors are locked, then you can play with stuff.
Yeah.
Like how your intelligence stat matters more, and you can buy there's the various tools to open the door and
right
and so I think that adds fun. I think that's the thing about Zone Mortalis, is there's more, even though like the Book of Peril has a lot of rules for things that could be in a Sector Mechanicus game, it's still hard to, like, if you want to interact with the terrain and like use a control panel or whatever, you're going to be blown away by some sniper on the roof of a building on the other side of the board. Whereas in Zone Mortalis, you can have a guy that's screwing around with some secondary thing like a door terminal or a loot crate, and he might survive long enough to bring it, whatever he's doing, to help out the rest of the gang.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the doors really are one of the more unique elements. And I think that with the mechanics where you could see over the walls really kind of defeated that a little bit. So that's why I don't use that particular approach to the walls like that. But I definitely agree. More walls or more doors definitely provides more kind of interactive elements, which is really nice for the players who kind of have higher intelligence stats, who can kind of, you know, play around with doors. I'm a big fan of the closing a door on someone with the tactics card, you know, that kind of approach. If someone is foolish enough to leave their ganger standing in the middle of a doorway and you happen to have that card, it's always fun to crunch them in the doorway.
Well, I remember one battle where it was gathering loot crates and one of them was in a room, and like I had guys in there to get the loot crate, but the enemy gangers closed the door on me, and then I would open it and shoot at them, and then they'd close the door on me again. And we kept fighting over opening and closing the door. And and even if your intelligence is low, you can just try and destroy the door, or if you're Goliath, you just rip the door off its hinges. And that's kind of fun stuff too. And and with the doors, it gives you that feeling of a SWAT team or you know, special forces, where they're doing the sweep of the building and they kick open the door and then they run in and sweep the room. And
which reminds me, one of my favorite tactics cards is from the the Enforcer's deck, which is Breach and Clear. So someone is able to make a door open action and then gets a free, I can't remember if it's a free shoot action or whatever it is. They're able to, you know, either toss a grenade or shoot into the room and clear the room for whoever's coming in behind them, which is definitely something that I feel like was something it's a cinematic kind of thing that I imagined happening, but then wasn't able to happen in the game until that card came out.
Yeah, I had the Enforcers use that against me last campaign. Although I think it's a generic one anyone can use,
it is a
right?
generic one, yeah, anyone can use it. That was a good one. Definitely one of my favorite additions in that deck.
Yeah.
So what are some of your favorite kits for adding into the Zone Mortalis scenery that's not the actual Zone Mortalis kits? Yeah, I know you had mentioned Sector Mechanicus stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the Sector Mechanicus stuff because the Ferrotonic Furnace, when I didn't have enough walls, it definitely fills up a good amount of space in the tiles to pretend to be a wall. I like statues because that's 40K to me, that there's a giant statue that's in a small enclosed room and yes. Insane. I don't know anything that, like, I have some third party thing that's like a pile of junk that looks like an Archaeotech horde. I don't know what it's from.
Right.
I got it in some mess of things. I know I see a lot of. I've been watching YouTube videos to try and figure out how I'm going to make some slime and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
To put on. Like, for my Zone Mortalis, I'd like to make something that. Maybe is in 2x2 squares or you know, that would I could place in different areas more or less and fit with the thing, and I could have a room that's flooded with some toxic slime or something.
I'm a big fan of the sort of like environments where the Zone Mortalis is, you know, it's a tunnel system that sort of opens into a environment where, you know, there's hostile stuff going on, whether it's like, you know, a sluice way where suddenly it's like rushing water. And if you fail a strength test, you get sucked under or something of that nature. It's definitely fun to kind of think of it as sort of these unplanned or like sort of patched together spaces where suddenly this random tunnel opens into a factory floor. And there's machinery everywhere, and it's like, oh, well, like suddenly we're no longer in a tunnel system. Now we're sort of in an open area, and like you can mix those up in ways that the sort of, you know, environment doesn't have to be always the same sort of walls and doors. You can have a little bit of variety. I'm a big fan also of the walls, or not the walls, the piles of scrap from the Orc garage.
Oh yeah.
I also think that I haven't done anything with them yet, but the those walls, the Rizza pattern walls, are an interesting sort of environment to add in, where it's like you'll have solid walls and then suddenly you've got this space where it was like a building within a building, but it's in ruins, and there's sort of, you know, there's cover, but it's not full line of sight blocking the way the ZM walls are. That's another thing I'd like to definitely experiment with.
And I think there's some of it, but the like kill team stuff, like the Rogue Trader box, I've been working on. I'm going to paint those soon. There's a lot of the escape pods in there. I think that's a fun thing. Maybe even
those are really cool.
Around it, and I don't know. Oh, yeah, and I built – and one thing I think you – gotta think about, there's that sabotage scenario where it says you have a 2x2 inch target that one side is trying to blow up. Like, that's one of the first things I did. I just grabbed a bunch of bits, and I couldn't tell you what exactly I think this machine does, but it's something important to whatever gang I'm attacking. And it has like a giant, I guess in the Underhive, they don't really understand technology. It probably does something really simple, and all half of the things on it don't do anything.
It's actually just an espresso machine, but the rest of it was in the guidelines for the STC, so they built it anyway.
Yeah, so it looks it's but it's 2 by 2 inches like
So
it's
yeah,
supposed
so
to
when you're
be, and
using
it's a
when
crazy
you're
thing.
using objectives on the board, you like to do kind of scenery items to use as the objectives.
Yes, I made yes, I like one of the more recent things I played at is I made my own scenario that's you're hunting creatures because you're tired of eating just corpse starch for every meal, and you're not ready to go full
Full
corpse
cannibal.
grinder cult and
Yeah,
eat
that's actually a
raw
really
human meat, but
I haven't looked through all the missions in the I haven't looked through all the missions in the Dark Uprising or Book of Ruin. There might even be one that does that already, but that would be a cool way to tie into the Uprising campaign where they're, you're fighting over meat and resources, and you have a mission where, you can get bonus meat for hunting something. That would be a cool kind of tie in with a campaign theme.
Yeah, so, 'cause, so I've got a bunch of those, the original Necromunda metal miniatures of giant rats, and then there were flying things called Ripper Jacks, and there were some kind of worm centipede thing called Millisaurs, and we chased, those were the objectives, and they randomly moved around, and you had to kill them, and then you had to bring their bodies back to your deployment zone, and it worked. It worked better than I hoped on my first try, 'cause we each got the one that was nearest to us, even though it took us a while. And then we, the one that started in the middle, every time someone grabbed it, they got shot down by a bunch of the other gang, and they were
Right.
fighting over it. And that's exactly how I wanted it to work.
Yeah, it's always nice when a scenario kind of comes together. I think the Beastmen Endless Spells from Age of Sigmar has a flock of birds that would work really well for a kind of
Yeah.
razor wing flock or whatever, razor jacks or whatever you want to mechanic you want to use for that. Unfortunately, you only get, I think, one of them in the box, so it would be cost prohibitive to run five of them, but you might be able to split them up.
Yeah, I was looking at the Skaven stuff to like swarm for swarms of rats and giant rats and
Yes,
things. I haven't
I
pulled the
have
trigger yet, but that
stolen
seems
a bunch
useful.
of my spare Skaven rats to use for Necromunda giant rats, because you really can never have too many Necromunda giant rats.
Yeah.
Have you ever added your own rules for the scenery that didn't have GW rules?
No, the first thing I think of is in on the cardboard tiles, there's one big pitfall and it has some beams that run across it, and we said you could make an initiative check to try and run across that. And if you failed, then you were out of action, like you were when you fell in a pit. I think that I'd kind of like to see that something like that in a tightrope walking type thing in Sector Mechanicus. So, I guess that's
Do
anything that
you?
makes you take extra risk, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. I like the environment to feel a little bit dangerous. There's a bunch of stuff in Book of Peril that some of it's even a little bit over the top, where it starts to feel like you're playing against the battlefield more so than you're even playing against your opponent. Like you're both under so much peril from the carnivorous plants that it's like, okay, I'm not even going to be able to pay attention to him because I am like literally dying. And some of the missions in there are really fun, where one of them, like, the board is slowly flooding and you have to get away from the center where the flood
Oh,
is
yeah.
happening. But I haven't had a chance to play that one yet. Is there anything that you feel is missing from the existing Zomortalis rules?
Well, I heard someone talking recently about using, like, having their bomb rats open the doors, and I never even occurred to me because that's weird. I feel like there should be rules. The bomb rats go under the doors, the gaps under the doors or something, and maybe they should go, this is maybe a counter player, they should also be able to go through vents and not have it. I mean, they don't really have actions, so seems like they should be able to go through a vent just however much movement it is to get through the wall, 2 inches, I guess. And then one thing that like bothered me about the cardboard ones was, you fall into the pitfalls and you're out of action. But when you look at the Book of Ruin, when they have that environment where the whole bottom floor is a pitfall basically. They talk about you making intelligence checks and stuff to see if you can find your way back to the battle. And
Oh,
considering you could have
interesting.
catfall or a grav shoot, if you had a grav shoot, you really wouldn't be hurt from falling. Maybe there's a monster or radiation or poison down there, I guess, the
Yeah.
floor you get to that takes you out anyway. But I feel
Or, you
like,
know, the battle, it takes place over the course of like 10 minutes, and the time it takes you to get out is longer. So you're out of action, practically speaking,
Yeah, but
if
like
not literally like injured.
I would like to see, I don't know, somehow that you could maybe risk it to try and get back or climb up from the pit or something.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea.
And I kind of like the idea that when they talk about those environments, they kind of say that I like that one of the environment, it's Stygian Depths, I think, from Book of Peril. Like that's one. Like I kind of did it in Old Necromunda, and I kind of been wanting, and now there are actually rules for it. Where, and I think it says not to use it for Zone Mortalis, but now that you've got the multi-level Zone Mortalis, you could use it. And I like the Sunk
Yeah,
Sea one
it's interesting.
too.
The game has kind of evolved around like those definitions, and now I feel like a lot of the distinction is kind of, it's at least complicated, if not kind of moot, especially for the missions. It feels like the missions initially they really had a distinction in mind, and then by the recent books, I don't think they even label them as Sector Mechanicus or Zone
And
Mortalis
then,
anymore.
oh yeah, and that's another rule I feel is missing. They don't, for those Book of Ruin and Dark Uprising missions, they don't, and I think even the other books, they don't really, if it's a Zone Mortalis mission, they don't say how many tiles it is, which if you want to use the procedural thing defined in the rule book, you're supposed to know.
It tells you to deploy the number of tiles recommended, but then a bunch of the missions, most of the missions, don't give you the number of tiles recommended. So you just kind of have to make a decision about that between players.
And there's some, and I don't know if many other people have noticed this, but like the one smashing, there's some weird like ones that are Zone Mortalis where like smash and grab, it says you set the defender does their deployment, and then they put five loot crates in the whatever, one of them is a trapped and one of them is empty, but they put them in their deployment zone, but they have to be a certain distance from the edge. But that dis so the and you can the by the standard deployment rules, you either set up on an edge within 3 inches, but the loot crates have to be 4 inches, so you can't set up on an edge because then they're not in your deployment zone if you go by the rules. I think you could maybe just ignore that and they can be slightly outside your deployment zone. But
It's
if
like
they'll
Schrodinger's loot crate.
yeah if but if you the way you can make it work is you can deploy on a single tile, and you're and then but then all of the loot crates are on the same tile, and hopefully you're in a tile where they're at least in separate rooms or around the corner for each other, because otherwise the I mean, that seems kind of weird to me. I mean, I guess now with the new Zone Mortalis, they could be on different levels in the
That's true,
same
at least.
tile and be a little further apart, but I don't know. That's a weird thing, that weird rules thing I've noticed. And although I guess it worked out for me. The last time I played Smash and Grab, my opponent opened the bomb one first, then the empty one, then the game was over and I won.
Well, let me
So
tell you, I think people tend to rank the traps as being kind of not worth using, but some of my absolute favorite game moments have been from traps. Like the other day I was playing the escort mission from the gang raids, the like small skirmish, the small skirmishes, and the one of my players who was escorting the corrupt, enforcer, played the Melta trap on his guy, and then when he died, the Melta trap went off and killed the guy they were escorting. It was like totally hilarious because, like, you know, this is why traditionally you don't bring high explosives on an escort mission.
And yeah, there's a counter, a specific tactic card that's when a guy goes out of action, a frag grenade goes off on his spot,
Right.
which when I think about it, is, you know, not the frag grenade's not the deadliest weapon. If you were in the center of a bunch of enemies, maybe you could do it,
Right.
but I don't know how likely that is to get it perfect. But I'm just really tempted to take it and have a Jew run forward and he gets cut down.
Yeah,
And then
absolutely.
I blow. It'll be hilarious if he blows someone off of a high building and they fall to their
Right.
death. And if they don't cut him down, then the real guy goes and attacks him in close combat and with a chain glaive, and he's got a plus one to hit. So
Right.
I don't know. That's kind of fun to me. I don't know. I know a lot of people are like skittish in general about some of the crazier things that happen with tactic cards and environmental stuff, and maybe even now that they're making more of the brutes and oh, and all the allies you can get. But
Right.
really, if you all just you can, you know, the allies are kind of available to everyone. I mean, if you're legal or illegal, it depends on, but I think there's good ones on both sides, and
Yeah,
you just
absolutely.
get crazy stuff, and then it becomes super fun. Like my last gang, it hardly even mattered that it was a counter gang. Half the time, the
Right.
people on the battle were like my fallen noble ally or an ambot or hive scum that I was getting for free from some territory,
Yep.
and so then it gets super crazy and wild, and I think that's really fun, other than
Yeah,
just sticking to your
that's definitely
house
one of my
stuff.
favorite elements of the new game is that they've really opened it up so, you know, you can play just straight up gangs skirmishing against each other, but if you wanna kind of get in some of the weirder stuff, I mean, you know, my one player who's like the credit leader, he's a Vansar player and he really wants to run that Strix, the Batman looking kind
Oh,
of
yeah.
almost Spyro looking guy. And now that the Ad Mech are getting a kit that I can convert easily, he's gonna get him. But
Yeah.
he doesn't even care that it's gonna cost him however many credits each turn to use each game to use the guy,
Yeah.
because for him it's about he's like I can have like Dr. Octopus and Batman on my like
Yeah.
yeah definitely I'm gonna
Yeah.
have both of those guys show up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I remember in the old Necromunda there was the spires, and well, everyone thought that guy was one of them when they first saw it before they revealed it was actual a Vansar dude with a crazy outfit. But
Right.
yeah, I painted those. Speaking of superheroes, I painted my spires as the characters from The Tick. Like the big one
Oh,
is The
nice.
Tick, and
Yeah.
the flying one is Arthur the Moth Guy, and then the girl is American Maid, and the guy that's kind of got the claws and things, he's was Sea Urchin guy
Right,
from
right.
The
All
Tick.
right. Well, we're starting to hit the edge of the time limit for where I like to keep the show length. So, you want to give any shout outs before we close?
Yes, I want to use this opportunity to try and find more people to play with. My group, my Necromunda group in the area of Jacksonville is Jacksonville Necromunda League, which you can find on Facebook. If you live in the Northeast Florida or Southeast Georgia area, look for Jacksonville Necromunda League on Facebook, or maybe
And
even
I'll
if
put a link to the group in the show notes for anyone who's interested.
Okay, and even if you're maybe driving through Jacksonville on your way to Disney World or somewhere like that, you can stop by and play a one-off game with me on your way. Remember to bring your minis. I guess also, and it's no conflict interest to you because it's in February, as a different from opposite end of the year from
From
Nova,
Nova, yep.
is the convention I just ran some Necromunda at is called RapierCon in Jacksonville. So you can look that up on their website for when it is next year.
Cool. I'll
February.
Throw a link on for that too.
Yeah, and I think it's especially interesting to people interested in Necromunda. Might be interested in other. It's a general gaming convention, but it has like I played not just Necromunda, but a lot of old school GW games, Manowar, Battlefleet Gothic, even the Battle Masters game that was done with Milton Bradley.
Oh my god, that was my first game in the hobby. I got it when I was 7, and it was in my dad's storage unit until I think 2015 when I raided it, and that was actually my entry into Warhammer Fantasy Battle during the end times, was I converted my copy of Battle Masters into the start of a Chaos army. And I, and now, of course, it's 350 models because I can't help myself. But
and there was even like a 40K bike race at this convention.
Awesome.
So, where you just – I missed that and – I was running something else, but
I love when people get kind of weird with it and just do kind of strange stuff.
Yeah. So this convention has a lot of stuff like that where people have games they just made up with miniatures there. It wasn't this year, but every other year there've been a one where they have a pod racing with pod racing, Happy Meal toys and some other random terrain that they built. So.
Yeah. I'm actually the finale of the first, I believe the first night of, Nova Open, and this is a exclusive breaking news. Now I haven't really talked about it much, but the first night of Nova Open, the apotheosis for the campaign in a day is going to be death races. I think it's going to be two tables with like it's going to be a 6x8 kind of situation with like stuff in the middle, and then the players are going to race around. I'm still working on the rules to use. I'm thinking of maybe adapting something from Initial D because I liked the mechanics for that a lot when a store I go to used that for some racing games.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, it was wonderful talking to you, and I'm sure we'll have you on again in the future. Yeah. So thank
especially
you very much.
Especially for the Kaldor episode, I guess.
Oh, heck yeah. Heck yeah. I can't wait to get to all the gangs. It's daunting to kind of look at my schedule. I'm like, oh, I'm not even going to be like hitting all of the gangs necessarily this year, like just because I'm doing two episodes a month and I'm trying to get in all kinds of different angles and content. But I definitely want to get through everything because there's just so much to cover. And then once I cover all the basics, I can finally get on to, talking about the weird stuff.
Yeah. Well, how many new gangs are they going to add
exactly.
over this year?
Right?
They
already got a surprise new one, so who knows?
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, thank you, bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of the taste of filthy underhive air? Having trouble getting out of bed to go toil at the Factoria to build the tools of the Imperium of Man? Don't give up, Hiver. Reach for your pack of Mardux Low Sticks, the finest ingredients and the most potent narcotics. If it isn't Mardux, it's not worth smoking. Ooh, nothing like that Mardic taste. Mentholated for smoothness. Mardic, the only name in love.
And now for On the Tabletop. For this episode, we're going to be discussing the mechanics of using Zone Mortalis rules. The two big components of Zone Mortalis games are tiles and doors. The tiles divide the board into 12-inch by 12-inch squares, and they can be arranged as needed, either in a square, a rectangle, or in unorthodox shapes. For example, I like to use two tiles, then three in the middle, then two on the other side. Or in my last game, I made a single tile path that wound around the board, and players had to follow that to get to the mission for a resupply. When using Zone Mortalis rules, either the mission will tell you how to set up the tiles, or players will take turns setting up the tiles until all of the tiles for the mission are placed. The other big component that distinguishes Zone Mortalis is the doors that close off various rooms on the table. This mechanic creates a lot of fun decisions about when to open doors, who opens first, etc. It also blocks line of sight, allowing close combat gangs a better chance of closing distances without getting completely shot up. Doors can be used simply by using a simple action to open or close the door, but there's also the possibility that doors are locked, requiring an intelligence test at -2 at the terminal to unlock them, or smashing the door open, which is another option. There are also rules for a bunch of hazards corresponding to the out-of-production bad zone tiles. You can get the rules from a downloadable PDF, which I will link in the episode notes, that will allow you to recreate those tiles even if you don't have access to them yourself. There are also a ton of really cool rules in the Book of Peril. These rules can be totally bonkers and add a lot of fun to the game. They include a series of carnivorous plants, for example, barbed venom gorse, where the player who gets within 3 inches has to take an initiative check or take a strength 3 hit with the web trait. Worse, anyone hit by the venom gorse has to take a strength test every turn or lose a strength, eventually wasting away from the toxin. Grappleweed even chases players around the table. The Book of Peril also has a bunch of excellent missions that use the bad zone environments, and those don't necessarily have to be Zone Mortalis missions, but I think they suit them really well. Another thing, as I mentioned in my discussion with Neil, is that there are rules in the December 2019 White Dwarf that cover using the plastic Dark Uprising Zone Mortalis terrain. They added rules for lifts. Notably, they give the players a free 4-inch vertical movement, and anyone caught in the path takes a hit, same as having a door closed on them. They added rules for the stills that can be added to the walls, which if hit with a stray shot can cause them to explode in a cloud of gas. Stairs now require an initiative test when you go prone on them, or you'll fall to the bottom. Most of the rest are reprints of prior rules, but they're worth taking a look at as they add a lot of detail to your gameplay. The big thing I don't agree with in the White Dwarf article is their take on what to do when using the 3D terrain on the Zone Mortalis board. They suggest using True Line of Sight. And I know this was probably just them leaning towards simplicity, but I think that you should establish with your opponent where the walls go to the ceiling and block all line of sight, as the entire Zone Mortalis format becomes much less interesting if it's basically a hedge maze and someone with the high ground can see everything. I like the idea that if you're walking along the tops of walls, you're in a narrow passageway and your line of sight is limited to the interior of the wall on that level. That way, it gives the opportunity for someone to potentially use those narrow passageways to sneak up on their opponent, but it puts them in the vulnerable position of potentially getting shot up by someone on the other end. This is my own take, of course, but I think that makes for an interesting mechanic where you have the choice to take a risky option, and I think that that adds a lot more to the game than the sort of half-baked approach that they took in White Dwarf for simplicity's sake. Now, I also did come up with a custom scenario for this episode. The mission is called Get to the Choppa. It's, of course, a reference to the line from Predator. But the mission is a escort mission that I'm going to be including in the Nova Open Rules packet as one of the 6 core missions. And that's going to do it for On the Tabletop. On to the Arbitrator's Corner.
What's the matter, Underhiver? Gun jammed? Last cartridge fail after one shot? You messed up, didn't you? You went to Jimmy's. Fly-by-night scam artists like Jimmy will sell you a salvage gun they ran through an auto cleaner as factory direct, and they won't be there to back you up when the chips are down. Every Vansar gun passes a rigorous 12-point inspection. We have personally tested and calibrated your firearms, ammunition, and explosives to ensure the only victim of your arms is their intended target. Don't cheat yourself out of quality self-defense. Only buy certified Vansar brand guns and ammunition.
Welcome to the Arbitrator's Corner. This is going to be a short one, as this episode has already been my longest to date. We're going to talk a little bit about adding rules that enhance the narrative experience of playing Underhive Tunnels. Even if your players tend to like the more vertical elements of Sector Mechanicus, the different tactics necessary to do well at Zone Mortalis are a great way to get them thinking outside of their comfort zone and trying new things. If needed, consider baiting them. The Forgotten Riches scenario has a pile of credits just waiting to be looted. When it comes to representing Zone Mortalis environments, there's plenty of options for creating compelling dangerous hazards. There are rules for generating toxic environments in the Book of Peril that are perfect for representing the hazards of a Zone Mortalis battlefield. They're not specific to Zone Mortalis games, but I highly recommend trying some of them to heighten the stakes in your Zone Mortalis scenarios. There's a chart for rolling them, but it would make a lot of sense to choose them in advance and create a board that represents that environment, whether it's a hive forest having a bunch of overgrown alien plants or pools of toxic waste, etc. Another thing I recommend is model things like terminals and crates and even servers and NPCs to use as interactive objects on the battlefield. Perhaps a terminal by a pipe can open a gate and start releasing gas, filling the room with toxic fumes that require a toughness test. The idea of using a servitor or other NPCs as an interactive element also appeals. Check out the excellent auction house heist scenario from the Gang Raids packet for an example of this. When it comes to representing things in your Zone Mortalis games, one idea I really like in a Dominion campaign is representing the actual territories via different tiles that give you some kind of flavor from that territory. Whether it's a rogue dock stall to represent the rogue dock shop, you could even do that out of a shipping container, so it wouldn't be a fixed piece of scenery. There is the option to build a synth still and to build maybe a gambling den using a bunch of tables with cards and stuff made up to be on them, or some kind of slot machine or something like that. There's a ton of options that would give you a lot of flavor and a lot of feeling that sort of relates to the actual environment that you're playing. Another thing I really like is the idea that you might write down or take a picture of the table for each territory as you play it, and then when you play on that territory again, when someone attempts to contest it, you could use the exact same layout and be playing in the same environment. Anyhow, these are just some of the ideas I have for using the arbitrator's role as a way to influence the sort of narrative, compelling elements of gameplay in Zone Mortalis games. So take that of that what you will. And keep remembering that the board is an integral part of the game and worth having rules, but try to keep them as simple as possible and write them down so you're not constantly checking a book. That's going to do it for this episode. Thanks to everyone for listening. You can rate and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. Thanks again to Neil for coming on, and thanks to Purple Planet at purpleplanet.com for the show's theme song. Good night, everybody.